Hi, Sherry. How are you? I have no idea who you are. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
My name is Sherry Suter, and I'm from the interior of British Columbia. I have a farm. We've been kind of self-sustaining for about 22 years living in Canada. We moved from Switzerland. My husband is Swiss. I'm Canadian.
Oh, I'm starting to remember your email.
Yeah. And you know what? It, like, right now I have one of my ewes is lambing. I have sheep. And so it's possible that my husband might have to interrupt us. He's going to keep an eye on her and make sure everything goes okay. But yeah, she had to pick today and now.
Yeah. Yeah, it happens. Those animals, babies of every kind don't seem to, aren't terribly considerate of their parents' Correct. Timings.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I've been listening to your stuff on YouTube for some time. And of course, I've been following Jordan Peterson. That's what led me to you. And before I forget, I just wanted to thank you for, I know many people have, and I know that they all mean it as sincerely as I do. We really appreciate all the time and effort that you put into this, because it's really, really helpful. And I've been able to refer lots of people to your YouTube channel just for that extra insight, you know, that they can get from watching your videos. So it's been great, really great. And the conversations are actually really great too. I've enjoyed them a lot.
No, thank you. Yeah, the conversations never get quite as many views, but I love the conversations.
I do too, because it's where the rubber hits the road.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that's what really interests me, is how is this, you know, this is where everybody is applying all these ideas, and how is that working out for them, and where is it leading them ultimately?
Yeah.
And that's of course surprising both myself and you too, I think. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And I think you said it very well. So usually we just get the show, what's going on, but what a huge, as a pastor, especially, because you get this as a pastor, because you preach, but yeah, you also get it coming back. And so for me, being able to have this channel, to have us talk about, how are these ideas changing me? What new ideas am I having? And then yeah, to have people share their stories, this is just so much fun.
It is. And that's what really matters, you know? I mean, people can have lots of ideas and they can talk till, you know, the cows come home, but it's how those ideas are improving their lives, and, you know, spiritually and emotionally and physically and, you know, even financially. And, and so that's really, to me, that's, I'm a very practical, I'm like the ultimate pragmatist, I think, you know, if it doesn't work, that's it, you know.
Well, you have no choice when you're on a farm. I mean, that's...
Well, that's right. Yeah, you kind of get formed that way. You know, like, experience forms you into this person who, you just don't have a whole lot of time for things that aren't, you know, applicable. You know, they don't have to be practical, but they have to be applicable.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm also a Christian. I've been a Christian since I was about 19 years old. I didn't grow up in a Christian home. I'm 56 now, so it's been a long, long time. I'm also married. I'm married for 33 years. I have three children.
Congratulations.
And yeah, and my oldest daughter has three children, so I'm a grandmother.
Wonderful.
And
I'm jealous. Yeah. I'm not a grandparent yet. I'm leaning on they're not married yet either, so I don't lean too hard, but it's like, at some point, y'all, little something in return here, grandbabies.
It's great, but the only problem is they're all in Europe. I'm in Canada. They took advantage of their Swiss passports, and they all went traveling and then, you know, met the loves of their lives and so on. So that's where they are. Yeah. And they're doing well. I'm I'm actually very proud of all my kids. I think they're fabulous. So
wonderful.
Yeah. And as far as my personal life, my Christian life, I was not raised in a Christian home. My parents became Christians when I was about 14 years old. And I had a, turbulent teenage years and so on and so forth. I don't really need to get into all that. But my conversion story, just in a nutshell, was that I was pregnant at the age of 19. I moved back in with my parents. I was not interested in going to church. My parents, by the way, are they came to know the Lord through the Plymouth Brethren. So a very conservative, very tight-knit group, not closed, but very close to it. I moved in with them, and when I had my daughter, I decided that I needed to give her all the best options in life so that she didn't have to go through some of the things I did. Mm-hmm. And I thought I would start just by reading the Bible as a textbook. I remember saying that to myself. I'm just going to read it as a textbook, you know?
You fool!
I know! So I got sucked right in.
Sam Harris wasn't around to warn you.
No. I figured, it's done a lot of good for the world, I think. So, maybe it'll help me raise my daughter. And I fell in love. I started in Matthew, and by the time I got to John, I was madly in love with Jesus.
Wow.
I couldn't believe. I think the thing that stood out to me the most was that I couldn't believe how smart he was. I was just like, his responses to people were so, like, they were not human, And he drove it home every single time, So, and that to me was just divine, there was no other explanation for that. So. Yeah. So that's kind of that in a nutshell.
That's a great story. That's a great story.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course I being Canadian, when Jordan Peterson raised his head above the parapet for Bill C-16, I was like, well, who is that? I like that guy.
He raised his head. Hey! I found Bucko last week. So
that's right. Oh yeah, right.
He's back in the office.
He's back in his spot.
Back in his place. He always falls. He always falls off the shelf. So drinking lobster.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on. I'm sorry. I interrupted.
That's all right. So I I've kind of always had a bit of a radar for truth. And honesty and integrity, it's just something that it stands out for me. I can spot it. I'm not always right, that's for sure, but when I saw that, I saw it on the news actually, and I was like, okay, who is this guy? And Googled his name, and he's either fabulous or he's absolutely crazy, which is actually what he said, right? About it. And of course I ran into all his lectures online, and I thought, and I love, like, I did the personality test, and I'm very high in openness. So I'm just like, I love ideas. I love, talking about things, anyway. So when I saw what he was all about, I just thought, well, you know what, I'm going to start with the personality lectures. And he had started the biblical series at that point. He was kind of midway through the biblical series, and I have to give myself little rewards. So I promised myself that if I was a really good girl and I listened to all the lectures, I could have the biblical series at the end.
I know that strategy.
Yeah. And so I slogged through everything. And of course, by the time I got to the biblical lectures, I had a really good idea. And it was a good thing I did it that way, because, and I wanted to, because I needed to know what, you know, what is this driving force for all of this? You know, what is the, you know, the focus in this man's life? And you know, there's got to be a lot of impetus there. So, yeah. And then, of course, I, you know, ran across your videos and I watched many of them. And I, you know, I don't always have a lot of time to watch as much as I'd like. Winter is my, you know, I hunker down and do that.
Yep.
Yeah. Now we're lambing and gardening, and you know, that'll all start pretty soon, and then it gets too busy. But yeah, and one of the things that stood out to me about what you were after was, what is going on here? You know, it was like you were, and I understand this as a Christian for many, many years, and I've been to many different churches, you know, and I've seen this and that. How is it that the psychologist can rally all these people to the Lord, like to God, you know, in that direction at least? And the churches are just like, you know, they're just, you know, they're like the Hunchback of Notre Dame, you know, just limping along on one leg, you know.
Ooh, Hunchback symbolism. Oh my, this is going to be interesting.
So, and I have, you know, being the kind of person I am, I'm always thinking about things, you know, I'm always tossing ideas around. And so I thought, I need to talk to Paul and I need to throw this out to you. And I need your opinion on these things. I don't want to tell you what I think.
Okay.
Because I think that, like, I actually don't get to have these conversations very often.
Yeah.
Being where I live.
Yeah.
And so it's nice for me to also share some of this with you and get your feedback. You've been to seminary. You've been a pastor for many years. And I know that you know a lot more than I do. So, I'm just, if you don't mind, I'm just going to kind of throw out a few things, and
it's
then
your time.
And
I'll, then we'll play along.
We'll get your response.
Okay. Don't feel, if I go on too long, don't be afraid to cut me off.
I you know what? We can always do it again, because right. I think it's the kind of thing that it's pretty heavy. I think it can get pretty heavy what we're going to talk about here. Okay. So, I'm just going to look at my notes really quick here. Okay. So I'm a firm believer in getting back to the beginning, you know, so to speak, quote unquote. Right. Yep. And for me, the beginning is Genesis.
Yep.
And then there's so much truth in Genesis. There's so much there, yep, that you can always kind of go, you know, back and, yep, and then from that point, try to move forward.
Yep.
So, thinking about the difference between, or the difference in effect that Jordan Peterson is having compared to the church, let's say. My question is, or my observation, and it's going to be really hard for me to get this all, you know, coherent. Oops. Everything okay? Two babies? Oh, wonderful. Oh, wow.
Whoa, okay, congratulations. Well,
we can still talk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay, so so the church places a lot of emphasis on our lack of, you know, like our insufficiencies, let's say. You know, this is my experience, okay? Now, this might not be everybody's experience, but... So there's this, you know, this idea of the sinful man, the dying to self, the crucifying the old man, that, you know, all this kind of thing, right? So the church, generally speaking, places a lot of emphasis on that. And just as an example, this is kind of a living example. I was in counseling many, many years ago. And one of the things with a church person, and one of the things that we were doing was learning how to die to self, right? So it was like, get up in the morning and you could pray through some of these prayers and you could do these things. And then you get up and you move and you try to be the best person you could possibly be. And I just felt like it was like spinning my tires in a big mud bog, you know, like that's how it ended up feeling to me.
Yeah.
And I made the analogy to this person who was well-intended and it was all good.
Yeah.
That I felt like, you know, if I get up in the morning and I crucify the old man, right? So I literally like crucify myself to a cross.
Yep.
Then I'm hopping around on a pogo stick, basically. I don't have my hands or my feet. and the slightest obstacle sends me flying face first into the mud.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so that was what I was seeing. Now, years and years and years later, and a brain injury later, I was in cognitive behavioral therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to my psychologist, this is just like Christianity. This is, you have to do the work. You have to change your mind. That will change your feelings, which will then change your thoughts, right? Like, so you got to get up. You got to crucify your old man.
Yep.
You got to pop around on your pogo stick and hope to God that you don't fall flat in your face.
Yep. Yeah.
And so I said to him, this is not going to work for me, because it didn't work for me in the church either. Mm. Right. Because that, to me, that isn't grace.
Mm-hmm.
And I know grace can be taken out of context, and I know it can be used to, you know, ice over a whole lot of really bad things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not how I mean it. So let me say it this way. Let's say the church says, you're a sinner and you need God, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Which is what the church says.
Yep.
Compared to Jordan Peterson, Jordan Peterson says, you know you're a sinner.
Mm-hmm.
You know your insufficiencies. You know you're not cleaning your room. You know that you need to be a better person. You know that you need to be a better husband or a better wife. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can be that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there is a gap there
mm-hmm.
for people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that gap, now, here's my question to you. The church tends to see our humanity as the sinful part of us. Right? Christ comes to indwell us and then we're saved, but we still have to deal with sin. Now, is that my perception or is that correct?
Well, the task of pastors and theologians is to split words. And the church has traditionally said we have three enemies. We have the devil, we have the world, and we have our sinful nature. I just finished doing a video on the big Liberty video with Peterson. And there's a video that comes after it that you might or might not have seen.
I did watch.
Okay, the second one. And actually a conversation I had yesterday with Nick, where we talked about, and Nick brought up Calvinism.
I started it, but I haven't finished that one yet.
Okay. There's an unresolved question in Christianity. And when I say unresolved, I mean that all of Christendom has not yet resolved it. And so this is Calvinists versus Arminians. This unresolved question about how does God work with respect to how do we work? And C.S. Lewis actually addresses this a bit in Mere Christianity and says that God's working and our working is not like two bricklayers standing and each contributing bricks to a wall.
Yeah.
And that, I think, gets into, now I often talk about with Jordan Peterson stuff, God number one and God number two. Yeah. God number one is immanent. It is the God that is built into us via psychology and formation over thousands and thousands of years. God, you know, has built stuff into us, and that's the immanent God. And then, but then there's the transcendent God, which is much closer to the conscious agent that acts, that we associate with action. So, you know, and I actually like a lot of Peterson's imagery in terms of burning off the dead wood. That's very similar to Christian mortification. But exactly knowing what is dead and what is living is never, you're never quite sure. And, you know, perhaps it's kind of like, and you, in terms of farming, deal with these unsure places all the time. For example, I'll use an illustration like clipping the nails of my cat or my dog. I mean, you can got to clip those nails, but you know, you don't want to cut it, the phrase, cut it to the quick, where you're going to hit that vein and it's going to bleed out. But, and so you're always in there. And so when it comes to our mortification, it's a process of discovery moving forward. I love your imagery of the pogo stick, because what happens too often, I think, is that, okay, so you have this set of rules. And so you have the Mosaic Law, for example. So here are all the rules. And if you listen to David Nasser in the video talk, he likes to set up a very clean dichotomy. Here's all the things in the Bible, and here's the bad me. But sin is far more intertwined than that. And so it isn't God's sanctification of you, his making of the new self. He is going to keep using parts of the old self that will painfully have to die. And it's more like the weeds and the tares in that they kind of grow together often. So that...
Okay. Well,
does that imagery help?
It does. It does.
Let me get back to CBD, cognitive behavioral therapy. You know, I was reading some of that in Jonathan Haidt's book, the Coddling of the American Mind, because all of these, you know, all of these issues that we're dealing with in the culture war have their connections to pastoral issues as well. For example, victims and victimizing. And Peterson is dead on right in this. If I say to myself, I'm a victim and everyone else is to blame. Now I've made all the deadwood that has to burn everyone else, and I've just sanctified myself. That's a very unhelpful way. So cognitive behavioral therapy means I've learned, I was listening to a story by a comedian about his use of psychedelics and Gabor Mate, the guy. So I listened to a video about that, and he was telling the story about when he was young, he had some trauma in his childhood, and what had happened in him was that he had taken on some patterns of behavior that, in a sense, protected him as a child, but now that he's an adult, they need to die. And there's a lot of that going on, that in cognitive behavioral therapy, those are the kinds of things you have to address. And it's very similar in terms of sanctification and mortification. But that process is the reason that...
Well, that's the mystery.
Yes.
That's the mystery. And see, so for me, what happened was I told my psychologist that I didn't want to do CBT anymore. He had to find me another form of therapy.
Okay.
And he did. He found me a form of therapy called acceptance and commitment therapy. It's based on Buddhism.
Oh.
And I read through the literature and I said to him, okay, this actually coincides with my belief system, so I can make this work.
Okay.
And so, you know, Buddhism does come alongside Christianity in certain places.
Yep.
And especially in this place. And I'm not promoting that by any means, but what I'm saying is that it's about accepting your situation, your flaws, your demons.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is from a purely psychological viewpoint.
Yep.
But committing to making that path forward. So you're going to the city of God, okay? You're going to pick up your load, you're going to climb those steps, and you're going to get to the top.
Yep.
And Jesus uses that kind of imagery when he says, my burden, my yoke is easy and my burden is light, right?
Yep.
So, and the beautiful thing about acceptance and commitment therapy is it's actually not hard once you understood it, okay? Whereas cognitive behavioral therapy, and I'm using these as kind of juxtapositions, like showing the different approaches to, you know, sanctification, I guess, is that what you call it?
Yep.
You know, so the cognitive behavioral therapy is the pogo stick, right? It's the, I'm sorry, you know, excuse me, crash, bang, boom. And trial and error and failure and people, you know, like that's a horrible feeling, right? When you fail. And whereas acceptance and commitment therapy is, okay, I'm going to pick up this load and me and all my garbage, we're all going to go together and I'm not going to care what they say to me. They can say whatever they want because the theory with acceptance and commitment therapy is that if you engage with all these voices, all these demons, all these, you know, distorted thoughts or whatever, then you actually you're pulling over and you're not going anywhere.
Okay.
Right. You've turned around and you've engaged and you're not moving forward.
Right.
So they have this little image. There's actually, I think, a little YouTube video about it just to help people understand the concept where you're on a bus, you're driving the bus, you know, and you're headed for Value Mountain. And so if you just tell them all, listen, you can talk all you want. You can do anything. You can say anything. It's not going to bother me because I'm driving here. I'm going here.
Yeah.
And it disarms them. It actually like will disarm your thought processes. And that can be, I mean, it's not identical, but there's something to that in the Christian life for me anyway, where I can, because a lot of people, you know, I grew up around a lot of Christians and a lot of Christians beat themselves up because they're not the best person that they could be. Right. And we could go on about this for a long time. Bob Dylan says in one of his songs, temptation's not an easy game and I'm giving the devil rein, but sin, you see, I've got no choice. It runs in my veins. And this is the thing that I think is so true. It's like it's a disease, sin. It isn't an act. Right. It's not like I hit my sister, so I'm a sinner, or I watch porn and that makes me a sinner. Right. It's a disease, right? And when God created Adam and Eve, he created them in his image. And he walked with them in the cool of the evening and he fellowshipped with them in Genesis. So this is getting back to the beginning. And everything was cool, right? Between God and man. So humanity was not a problem. You know, like our humanness wasn't a problem. It was when that sin entered through Adam. You know, which was actually just an independent move, right? It was independence from God. And then the relationship was broken. And so I think that Jordan Peterson is making that distinction somehow.
What distinction?
It's okay. God made you human. He knows your failings, right? And you don't have to jump around on a pogo stick. You just have to pick up the load and move forward, right? You got to keep moving forward.
There are times when you do wind up on a pogo stick, and you know, when you look at, especially when you look at, say someone who is trying to get sober. I mean, that mm-hmm. for them, I think probably often feels like it. So,
of course.
Yeah, it's the path.
It's not to say that you don't try. You
right.
know, it's not
right.
to say that you never get up in the morning and try to be a, you know,
right.
it's like, but there is something about this identity. Like, you know, we're told in the scriptures that we are everything that Christ is, we are. Everything that he has, we have. And how many people actually acknowledge that
yeah.
first thing in the morning, you know, and walk in that?
Yep, yep. And the, oh no, that's so right. And so, you know, I just finished again listening to that video again. There's so many things I try to, one of the things I try to get across sometimes is the idea of more than. Because so often we like to handle paradox with balance. And that's sometimes a very helpful way to handle paradox with balance. But, you know, Tim Keller, for example, has a saying, you are more sinful than you can imagine, and you are more loved than you can believe. And
yeah.
But there's also more of those more thans. And one of Jordan Peterson's, which is, you're more powerful than you understand. And
right.
you're also more vulnerable than you understand. I mean, all of these more thans are there. And I think part of it is because this gets into, I mean, one of the earliest things I picked up from Peterson was the low resolution, high resolution language, which when I heard him
right.
use it, I thought, oh, that's genius. That's really helpful. We
yeah.
we work in this world with such low resolution. And so then someone makes a discovery, I'm way more powerful than I thought. And it's like, yeah, you are. You're also way more vulnerable than you are. And so that's
right.
when we try to get into balance. I'm way more loved by God than I can possibly imagine. Wow. I'm also way more rebellious and sinful than I'm aware of. And so it's kind of the resolution continues to heighten. And sometimes we get
right.
glimpses of a more than, and then when we don't see some of the other more thans, things do get a little out of balance, and that's usually, wow, I'm more powerful than I am. And then you go out on that, and you discover, wow, I'm also more vulnerable than I thought I was. So life just continues to up the resolution, and I think that's where we get into kind of C.S. Lewis's last battle further up and further in, because you never exhaust. There's God.
No, and that's the beautiful thing.
Like yeah.
that's the thing about going back to the beginning, right? Because when as soon as you get back, you start going back to the beginning, it gets so deep. It gets, you know, then you're talking about redemption, right? So that's when the story of redemption started. As soon as Adam, you know, as soon as sin entered the world through Adam, it was on. The redemption story was on,
right.
you know, and everything else, you know, from that moment in time on is the redemption story.
And right? look at the name of the tree. The name of
I
the
know.
Tree is not tree of the knowledge of evil.
No,
it's tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And so
yeah.
actually, and this gets into, this gets, there's ancient theological debates that surround these issues that are
yeah,
also unresolved, but we don't pay much attention.
I've thought a lot about that whole issue.
Yeah.
Of,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Why did God put the tree in the garden?
Yeah.
And I remember speaking to a Jewish man who was a Christian, and he taught at, a church that was for Jewish Christians.
Yep.
You know, I don't think he was called a rabbi, but anyway, and I asked him that question. He just looked at me and smiled and said, good question.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's one of those, you know, it's one of those, but yeah. So, one of the things I wanted to ask you about too was, what do you think about the whole idea of this? Like, you've talked about, I can't remember how you phrase it, but you've talked about, you know, the end game being the new heaven and the new earth.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
How do you phrase that?
The reconciliation of heaven and earth.
the reconciliation of heaven and earth. Okay, so do you think that that is somehow symbolic as the reconciliation between man and God?
Yes.
Because...
That's it.
Okay. Okay, good.
That is it.
Good, I just did it. Okay, so this idea of God making us human, man, and then us sinning, so disease, you know, this disease enters our line, and it just, it's like a cancer that just putrefies everything, like right down the line, right?
Yep.
Then Jesus comes, and he is a man, but he's also God.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So there is this embodied reconciliation of man and God.
Yes.
And I love that.
Yes.
Okay? Because what that refers back to is the garden.
Yes.
And man and God walk together in the cool of the evening, you know? And that's the thing that just sends chills down my spine.
Yes. Yes. You know? That's all built in there. It's all there. That's what Peugeot is so good at, is helping people see, oh yeah, yeah, Jesus. And the Bible talks in these ways sometimes. And we look at them and we kind of puzzle, but it's all built in there. Jesus is the story.
I know.
Just built into him. But then it's important. He's creation 1.0. He's the reconciliation of heaven and earth. And then in the resurrection, he's creation 2.0. He's the reconciliation.
Right.
New heavens and new earth come together. I mean, all of those things come together in that story. Yes.
Death, which was the consequence of sin entering,
right?
Was taken care of. Like that's like, it's that redemption story, right? Started then and then found its culmination in Christ, right?
That's right. Yep.
So somehow this whole reconciliation thing, now I'm just going to toss this in here and see what you think. It's like a marriage, right? Which is what the church and Christ are described as, the bride and the bridegroom.
That's right.
And in this marriage, and I think this is the reason that many people seek a partner and a commitment, a lifelong commitment, is a knowing, right? A knowing, a deep sense of belonging. And so that brings me to the, you know, the verse, right, from Paul. For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know even as also I am known.
Yeah.
And to me that is, you know, we have, I listen to all the conversations and I listen to Jordan Peterson and I listen to you. And it's very informative and it's great. I love it. But now we see through a glass darkly, you know? And so there's this moment in time where everyone is going to be known so intimately. It's going to bring about this incredible feeling of being in this marriage, in this reconciled state. You know, it's just glorious, isn't it, Paul?
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. Yep. It's all there.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
I know.
And that leads off into so many glorious places. And we can just kind of touch it with our imaginations. But you know, C.S. Lewis deals with some of these things, Until We Have Faces. If you've ever read that novel, it's his best novel.
I haven't read that one.
Oh, it's his best novel.
I haven't read that one.
And he actually wrote quite a bit. He kind of co-wrote it with Joy Davidman, which is interesting because she was an interesting person too. But that's exactly right. And it's, you know, it's this Augustinian idea that every taste. So again, the big Liberty video of the convocation itself, Note in the Network is a guy who makes videos too. He watches my channel and sometimes he refers to my videos in his channel. And he made the comment that, you know, when David rushed the stage and said, "Oh God," Note says, well, you know, is he talking about is it just an exclamation? Or is he looking for God through Peterson? That's very Augustinian. That's very right. He's, you know, he's, that's what we're doing. That's what we're looking for, God in beauty and in good food and in the beauty of creation. There's a there's a story, you'll appreciate this, told to me by my father, was told him by his father. My grandfather was pastoring churches in rural areas in the Midwest. Almost all the Dutch immigrants were dairy farmers. So they one of his parishioners once asked him if, you know, if there will be calves in heaven, because he doesn't know anything more beautiful than the eyes of a newborn calf. And you know, and so through those eyes, in a sense, he begins to see God. And the world is full of his glory. And no, that's right. All those things come together.
Everything. And it all always leads back to this Genesis.
Yeah.
It's such a complete package that it's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Like, because it doesn't stop.
Yeah.
And then there's the whole idea of, you know, in you and through you and to you and you know.
Yes. Yes.
So it's just fantastic, actually. And Jordan Peterson has actually helped me to see it from a different angle, I guess.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
To say, okay, yes, I understand this idea of death and resurrection and burning off the dead wood and carrying your load, you know, and being responsible. Those are, or should be, consequences of your, of you knowing who you are, you know. Kind of reminds me of the characters in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. They all had to learn to be royalty.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
They had to learn that they were kings and queens.
Yes. Yes.
And take on that position, you know.
Yes.
And as Christians, we have to really believe that about ourselves, you know.
Yes. Yes.
And
that's where the Edmund story is so precious, because you know, Lucy's the golden child. You know, Susan. Right. Ooh, what happened with Susan? Peter is the high king, but Edmund is the rebel. And and Aslan, so I just, in the video I talked about, I introduced Leo Beb and the Book of Beb. I don't know if you've ever read Frederick Buechner.
No.
But Leo Beb comes in Frederick Buechner's first of four novels called Lion Country. And he's a he's running a diploma mill, but he goes to this one park where there's all these lions out there. And Aslan, of course, is the great lion. And Aslan isn't in Leo Beb, but it comes together in that the great lion allows himself to be sacrificed, you know, for Edmund. And
I know. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It's beautiful. And it's all, you know, all that power that's found in that truth is ours. You know, and this is the thing, I think, that what Jordan Peterson is helping people with is giving them that you can be the hero.
Yeah.
You can do this. You can carry that load.
Yeah.
You can be, you know, the high king and the queen. Right.
Yeah.
This is your true calling.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's great. And as far as people going from atheism to God. It's kind of like my story. It's like, you can't read the Bible as a textbook, right? You put a toe over and either you recoil in horror because you've just encountered the living God, or you get sucked right in like a vacuum cleaner, you know, there's, it's just, you know, I wanted to read a quick quote. Is our time almost up?
Yeah, no, we're okay.
Okay.
I don't have a call after you, so I've got some flexibility.
Okay. I have this quote. I wrote it years ago in this little book here, and you'll probably recognize it's from Miracles. C.S. Lewis wrote this. "Look out, we cry. It's alive, and therefore this is the very point at which so many draw back. I would have done so myself if I could, and proceed no further with Christianity. An impersonal God, well and good. A subjective God of beauty, truth, and goodness inside our own heads, better still. A formless life force surging through us, a vast power we can tap, best of all. But God himself, alive, pulling at the other end of the cord, perhaps approaching at an infinite speed. The hunter, the king, the husband, that is quite another matter.
That's right.
There comes a moment when the children who have been playing at burglars hush suddenly. Was that real footsteps in the hall? There comes a moment when people who have been dabbling in religion suddenly draw back. Supposing we really found him. We never knew. We never meant it to come to that. Worse still, supposing he had found us.
Yeah.
So it is a sort of Rubicon. One goes across or not. But if one does, there is no matter of security against miracles.
That's right.
One may be in for anything.
That's right.
And I think that's what's happening to these people.
Yeah.
You know, they're playing. They're dipping that little cord in and see if they get a tug back. And oh my God, they do.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right.
You know.
Peterson, yeah. Again, in the Liberty video, I just finished the video on this, and he repeats the same story that he told in the Sam Harris video of the prayer story. Well, if you sit on the edge of your bed and you really mean it, and you know, something will talk back. It's like, yeah, that's right. Something will. Something. You put that something line will. In the water, you know, be prepared for what might be coming out of the water. Converting is not like making a decision on a sensible used car.
No.
Converting is more like falling in love. I mean, it takes.
It's absolutely that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It takes you. And I love your story where, well, I'm going to read the Bible because whoa, 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 whoa. And then other people will come to me and say, well, I read the Bible and it didn't take. And it's like, well, again, God number one and God number two. God number two is this living God. And you can't, you can look for him and you can find stuff, sure. But he's not, you know, that's the difference between pantheism. Pantheism is everything is passive, you know.
Right.
This is an active agent living being who can come after you. Then what? And,
right.
Yeah. And then suddenly our pride, our self-sufficiency, then we are the bride of Christ, and
that's right.
You know, and we're just don't want it.
Yeah, I hope that you know, if anybody watches this, that they're not frightened off from, you know, this kind of conversation about God, because it's really the adventure of a lifetime, right, to be in relationship with God. Yeah. You know, I was reading Hebrews 11 because I was thinking about this whole knowing idea, and I don't think we have time to get into it, but maybe we could another time. You know, one of the things, there's just a little short blip in the Old Testament about Enoch, you know,
yeah.
And Enoch was, you know, he didn't even live that long, apparently. He was, what, 300 when he died?
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody else was
850.
The teenager.
That's right.
But somehow he pleased God. And he was, you know, according to the New Testament, he was just taken. He wasn't, he didn't die.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, there wasn't any real law when Enoch lived, was there?
Not that we know of. Those early chapters of Genesis are so evocative rather than descriptive and detail oriented.
I've just thought about it from a purely, you know, the idea that Enoch could please God so much that he wouldn't die, and yet there were no laws. Okay, he couldn't fulfill anything.
Yeah.
Right? He was just a man who was in a relationship with God, with the living God. And the relationship was so great And he's listed in Hebrews 11 as a great man of faith.
Yeah.
And so then you have to wonder, well, what is faith? Is faith knowing God? Is that what it is? Like really, like knowing him as your husband, as your king, as you know, like this knowing, is that what faith is? Like you can't, another quick example is Job. So Job was tested, right? God allowed him to be tested. And I thought a lot about it. And I thought, Job never, God said, yeah, go ahead, you know, it'll work. He's not gonna cash in his chips on me, you know? And Job is also listed as a great man of faith in Hebrews 11.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, you know, if you know somebody really well, you know them so deeply and so well that people come along and tell you stories about them and it must be this and it must be that, that's the reason that they're treating you like this. You would actually say no, because I know them, right? And they would never do that. They wouldn't, that wouldn't be their reason. And I think that that's the same for Job. He knew God so intimately that he couldn't deny him. How could he? It would be like denying your mother or, you know, some living thing that you've had a relationship with, right? You just, so.
You've been married to your husband for 33 years. You know what you can trust him for, and you know what you can't trust him with. Am I right?
I didn't think I could trust him. Oh, yeah. I didn't think I could trust him with lambs, but he did really great.
Well, you're not done together, so.
but that's
right. And Hebrews, you know, Hebrews 11 gives this contrast of faith and seeing. And so faith is this grasping onto what we don't see, and also, you know, so you, the crazy thing, and this is where again I come, so how to talk about the Peterson stuff, and where does the resurrection fit in? It comes into these questions of, let's say, so Abraham, the Abraham story too. God says, "I'm going to make you a great nation." Abraham's like, "Great, this is what I've been waiting for." And then nothing. You know, God strings him along for 25 years. He's already 75, and his wife is already 60. You know, becomes 95, and and then, you know, all these ways that Abraham tries to do it himself, and God's like, "Nope. Nope, yeah. I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it in just the way you say I can't do it, which is through your old wife." And and then he does all that, and we have Isaac, and then kids, you know, 13 or whatever, take your son, your only son, to a mountain I'm going to show you. It's like, oh. And you know, all the way up the mountain, build the altar, you know, the whole nine yards, raise the knife, and God says, "Now I know." And it's like, what? You know,
I've been reading Soren Kierkegaard's Fear and Trembling.
Oh.
Have you ever looked at it?
No, I've never read it.
Okay, well, it's all about Abraham. And in the very beginning, he gives, like, I don't know how many, 6 or 7 different versions of Abraham's story. Just from a novelist would write, right? How Abraham felt when he got up, and how what Isaac felt, you know, and what they talked about, or if they talked, and you know, so it's a different scenario. Like, he just does these little scenarios, you know, and he takes you through every human conception of what it must have felt like for Abraham to go, and why it made him such a great man of faith. And I think one of the main points that he makes in it is not necessarily that he knew God would either raise him from the dead, or, you know, God's going to fix it, whatever happens. It was just that he trusted God, period.
Yeah.
Right. And that kind of trust, I mean, I never thought about it until I read that, but that kind of trust is not very common.
No. Because we have so few who are trustworthy at that level.
So
then you get to the hierarchies. Okay, your husband. And so, you know, if something were to happen to you, would he be there for you? And, you know, in a relationship, you work through these things. And of course, that's why betrayal, as Peterson says, is such a powerful thing, because it is trust betrayed. And
broken.
And that's why I love the description in 1 Corinthians 11 of the Lord's Supper on the night he was betrayed. I mean, it's just,
I know.
On the night he was betrayed, he took bread and he broke it. And he said, this is my body given for you. And it's like, oh.
I know.
Back to the Peterson thing. One of the things that Peterson, I think, has done is the church had kind of a black and white coloring book outlines of things. And for some things, Peterson has taken in the colors and made it colorful. So now, post-Peterson, when I think about betrayal, I see it more vividly than I did before Peterson. I understand it at a different level. And so much of Peterson's contributions have been in that way, which is really interesting. So,
And also just this innate sense of God, like that we carry with us, right? We have this, it's like we have all these little receptors out. We don't even know we have them. And when we come in contact with certain things, like this whole awe thing, right?
Yeah.
How awe is a physical sensation, and how, you know, it's like we get a little plugged into God for a minute, you know? Time to go. True.
Well, thank you, Sherry. Thank you so much for
reaching out. Yeah, it was
out.
Really nice. Yeah, and, it was great.
And I'll send you the copy of this, and you can look at it and decide if you're comfortable having it posted. And
okay, that sounds good.
And you know, it's always I don't want to post anything that people are like, well, I don't know. It's like, no, you gotta be sure. And and a lot of people say no, which is totally fine. But again, the part of the channel that has been really fun have been people have a natural curiosity. Who else is watching Jordan Peterson? We're all isolated here in YouTube land, unlike in a church
where you
look down the aisles and after the service, shake someone's hand and introduce yourself and hear their story. But you don't get that in YouTube land. So.
Yeah, unfortunately not.
No.
But it's been really fabulous listening to everybody's different stories and seeing their journeys, and it's encouraging.
It really is.
There's a lot of good things happening out there, right?
Yeah, there are. So thank you, Sherry, and good talking to you, and I will send this to you.
Okay, thank you very much, Paul.
Okay, good luck with the lambs.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.